Welcome to Trawler Talk, the official podcast of Passage Maker Magazine, the long-range cruising authority. I'm your host, Editor-in-Chief Jeff Moser. If this is your first time here, welcome, and if you're a returning listener, thanks for coming back.
Today's episode of Trawler Talk is brought to you by Outer Reef Yachts, a leading manufacturer of award-winning long-range motor yachts. Outer Reef specializes in building robust, blue-water yachts that focus on luxury, efficiency, safety, and technological ingenuity. With a model line ranging from 58 to 115 feet, Outer Reef Yachts has the perfect model to suit any cruising lifestyle. Find out more at outerreefyachts.com. Now, it's time for our podcast. Built in Singapore in 1963, Passage Maker, for many cruising enthusiasts, stood as the beacon of revolutionary boat design and workmanship. The historic Robert Beebe designed Passage Maker was the culmination of a gallant quest for an ocean-crossing cruising powerboat. And she logged countless crossings under her hull in the decades that followed and went on to inspire many of us to venture beyond the reef. She also is, of course, our magazine's namesake. After a regal life on the world's seas, 2019 found her slowly sinking at a mooring in Trinidad. Locals knew of the derelict vessel's past and helped guide our guests, Laura and Chris Remickle, to Chris's brother and her rightful owners. As you will hear, the Remickles wept for the task. This long-range cruising couple, who made four transatlantic passages from Cape Town to Trinidad and refit half dozen vessels together, bought Passage Maker for a song and went about the significant task of bringing the classic vessel back to form. Is the seventh refit lucky number seven? Stick around and listen. I think you'll enjoy this one.
My boating life started in South Africa working for Mercedes-Benz. I don't know if you recall those days. They used to have the race Cape Town to Rio.
Yeah. I know.
And because my dad and I, I wanted to build a yacht, and but as usual, funds were not there. But we built a 30-foot fishing trawler. Mm-hmm. And from there on, this is where my passion for boats came. And being at Mercedes, whenever the Cape to Rio came down, happened once a year. Mm-hmm. They used to send me down to the Royal Cape Yacht Club mm-hmm. to assist all these yachts that were equipped with Mercedes engines. And this is where it started probably in the early 80s.
Okay. Okay. And Laura, did you grow up boating?
No, actually I grew up in Edmonton, Alberta. We used to go out to the coast every year. For our holidays. So as soon as I finished high school, I moved to BC. And while I was at university, I was involved with some whale research. Mm-hmm. And I would spend hours and hours out in the middle of Johnson Strait in a 18-foot Zodiac.
Oh, how lovely.
All day long, following whales around.
So you're a marine biologist, and that was your background. You were studying for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then, of course, it just evolved. I also decided at one point I love diving. And so I moved to the Caribbean mm-hmm. to start doing some instruction, doing dive working as a dive instructor. So that's where Chris and I met.
So, you were a dive instructor. And Chris, what were you doing in the Caribbean when you guys met? It sounds like you met in the Caribbean.
I gave up my old life in Africa to come and help my brother assemble what they called in Neisner log homes. He had the franchise mm-hmm. from South Africa to build log homes in the whole of the Eastern Caribbean.
Oh, interesting.
So I came down, I gave up my job with Mercedes at the time, mm-hmm. and I came to help him. As a foreman or hands on the job to assemble these log homes. And this is, I'm not an instructor, I'm just a dive master. And when I went diving in Tobago, this is where I met Laura.
Mm-hmm. Chris also had, moved out to the Caribbean, he built seven or eight steel sailboats. So he was really good at reading plans. I think that's why how he ended up with the job of shoveling these bog holes, because he was just really funny with that.
Your brother lucked out there, Chris. So let's touch on those steel sailboats. You built these boats in Cape Town?
That is correct. They were designed by Dudley Dix.
Mm-hmm.
Dudley Dix is living now in, I think he's in Fort Lauderdale. He's a South African naval architect that won a green card on the lotto, I think, from the States, and he moved down to the United States, and ever since he's living there and still doing, I believe, plans for vessels, yachts, mm-hmm. Trawlers, what have you. I build these designs out of steel.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Now, you guys met, and then how did your lives, boating lives, begin? What were you guys doing on boats in Trinidad, I believe you said?
Well, we met in Tobago,
mm-hmm.
and it was kind of love at first sight, I guess.
Nice.
Anyways, so I had to go back to Canada and Chris had to go back to SA. But when he was there, he phoned me and said, you know, I found this sailboat. It needs a little work.
Mm-hmm.
You want to come over and help me sail it back to the Caribbean? And so that's kind of how it all began. This boat needed a little bit of work.
Was it true that it needed a little bit of work, or was it a wreck?
It wasn't a wreck, but it certainly wasn't as complete or ready for an ocean crossing as we thought. So it did take us a bit to fix it up.
Yeah.
And we had some problems on the way, but luckily not only do I have a good captain, but he really knows how to fix a boat underway.
You got to practice that. You could fix it at the dock when it's nice and calm, but if you're underway in some seas and something goes wrong, if you could fix it then you're a hell of a captain, I'd say.
Yep, I think so.
You made it back to the Caribbean, and I guess did you have other boats after that? I mean, or did you hold on to this one for a while?
Seventh boat.
Oh, wow. That's quite a bit.
We keep finding other boats that need fixing.
The whole thing in the Caribbean's, wherever you go, you need a visa. They give you a 3-month visa or mm-hmm. 6 months, depending. Oh. And you are definitely not allowed to work. I wasn't born with millions in the bank. So when we reached Trinidad, the very first boat that we crossed with, we sold that and we bought another boat that was of some brand, not any other boat.
Mm-hmm.
And needed a bit of TLC, so Laura and I would fix it, and then go out and do a little sailing around the islands while the boat was advertised, and then we would sell that one with a bit of a profit, and then come back to Trinidad and repeat that, buy another one, and this is how we sustained ourselves, by making small profits on boats and funding
our cruising.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty good plan to me. So how many times did you cross from South Africa to the Caribbean?
4 times.
Wow. Real veterans of that route. So interesting. Anything notable about those trips? Any serious breakdowns or animal sightings or anything else that you notable about the ships besides the doldrums of the long journey?
Well, everybody, there's not one boat that I've in my life encountered that does not have a problem on a crossing. Yeah, we had a mast going through almost through the deck due to bad reinforcement. None of my doing, lucky for that. We've had the very last crossing I did, the boat had been renovated by somebody else. It had a brand new engine and injector pump packed up on us in the mid-Atlantic. The generator stopped functioning. The Genoa tore a big tear in the Genoa. bad seas, and we landed up in Namibia, where we had to sort everything and eventually carried on. You know, it's not, as long as you got sails, you're not totally crippled.
Ah, good point. Good point. And you were, it sounds like you were close to South Africa if you made it to Namibia. So it's like sort of the next country up. So you weren't that far in the middle of this, of the ocean. You're able to get back somewhere, at least limp back in the port, right?
Yeah, we were about roughly, I would say, 180 nautical miles from the African coast, uh-huh. going towards, what's that island?
Santa Helena.
Yeah, Santa Helena.
Uh-huh. Okay. So we're going to flash forward a little bit and talk about your current vessel. How did you discover this boat?
Jeff, it's a long story, so I don't know where to start.
All right, let's start. Well, the boat we're talking about is our magazine's namesake, and that's Passage Maker, and that was built by, you know, Robert Beebe, and the history is long. But you saw the boat and probably didn't know it was Passage Maker. You just saw it as, I mean, I guess it was a derelict vessel at that point. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes. I tried to relocate myself and Laura. We tried to go back to Canada, mm-hmm. and live, I don't know if you call it a normal life.
Chris wanted to live in a civilized country. he's expected to be so cold.
Oh, yeah.
We were living in BC then, so it's not as cold as some of the rest of Canada, mm-hmm. but it was still too cold for an African boy who's not even used to wearing long pants.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So to go back to your question, I was not being able to live in Canada because of the cold, and I phoned my brother that he was a resident in Trinidad for 30 years, and he knows the ins and outs. And I did ask him to, like I said earlier on, we'd go back to Trinidad and buy another boat, refurbish it. So I phoned him and said, look around for a vessel that we can take over and redo, because I'm not making it in Canada. So he came back and he said, Passage Maker was floating there. It's an historical boat. Unfortunately, my brother did not do a proper survey. So,
the boat was kind of sinking.
It was sinking on a mooring? Oh, my God. Or was that, yeah. Was that a marina?
Yeah. It was on a mooring.
Mm-hmm.
And the water actually came in as far as...
Yeah, the engine was flooded. basically, this boat... The only good thing about this boat was the hull. The hull is as solid as a tank.
Is that right?
Chinese teak, and it's what, an inch and three quarters thick.
Wow, an inch and three quarters inch.
12 inches apart.
That's got to be first. Yeah. That's like probably when he built it. It's got to be first growth Burmese teak. So
absolutely,
I can imagine. Okay, so the boat is half sinking, the engine is obviously seized because it's underwater, seawater. At that point, were you familiar with the boat's history, or you checked the hull? You said the hull is good, and did you do any more research to figure out, oh, wow, this boat has, you know, this is a regal yacht that has history in this trawler community?
We did some research after my brother found the boat. It was attractive because he said all we needed is a coat of paint and we were good to go. So I did some research, and whatever's written about the boat, it's quite impressive.
Mm-hmm.
The boat is 60 plus years old, and it hasn't had one plank on a hull renewed. But I was not aware that when I say nothing, it's all capital letters. Nothing was functioning on this boat. Nothing. So money-wise, we came very short.
Yeah, it kind of overran our budget. Part of the problem was that we were, it was during COVID, uh-huh. and we couldn't get into Trinidad. we flew to Grenada expecting Trinidad to be open any time, and mm-hmm. we ended up spending 8 months waiting for it to open up. So in the meantime, Chris's brothers took the boat out of the water and mm-hmm. started doing some work on it. And so by the time we got into Trinidad, we were kind of already too far into the project to back out. When we realized how much work was what it was going to take, it was too late to say, no, we don't want this anymore.
I feel like
it's going to cost too much. But we kept on going.
Sounds like Chris's brother's quite the optimist and, you know, got it on the hard and started doing the work and led you on a little bit. But that's, I think it worked out in the end. But anyway, how did he find the owner of the boat and how did he make that deal?
Well, the boat had been in Trinidad for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody knew the boat and we found the owner quite easily. Mm-hmm. And he had been, he had the boat up on the hard in power boats, which is one of the main yards there, mm-hmm. boatyards. It's the boatyard we did most of all of our work in. And so they had records of it and it was easy to find the owner. Although he had passed away, and that's why the boat was kind of left derelict.
Oh, yeah.
And then we found his widow, who had gone back to South Africa, and we contacted her a little bit about the boat. She was really helpful,
mm-hmm.
and they had lived on the boat for 10 years, so it was her home. She had, she was very sentimental about it.
Oh, yeah.
And so she helped us out a bit with, you know, just questions that we had.
Okay.
And, yeah, we just went from there. We learned a lot about wooden boats, having this boat, too. We've had fiberglass boats. We've had steel boats.
Mm-hmm.
We even had a ferro-cement boat. This is our first wooden boat. And we went on to the wooden boat forum and some of the other Facebook pages for wooden boats. And we got a lot of helpful information and advice about wooden boats. So that really helped a lot.
And this was how many refits at this point is that you both have done together? This is the seventh refit. And I don't know if we disclosed, we haven't disclosed this yet, Chris and Laura, but how much did you pay for Passage Maker? How much did you pay the widow of the boat for to get ownership?
Yeah, the history of the last owner, I'm not going to go there. Okay, I will tell you, he ran away with a younger woman, and the family didn't want to know him. And they did not want to know the boat, and they said, for all that matters, the boat can sink. And my brother got the boat. He said, yeah, my brother wants to buy a boat. How much you want for it? She says, A couple of thousand US. So my brother said, a couple is 2,000. She said, yes, bring 2,000. So that we bought Passage Maker for 2,000 US.
Wow. Wow. That's, it's like I call them barn finds for cars. It's that Porsche wallowing away in someone's garage for 30 years. It sounds like this is a pure barn find. Of course, it needed a lot of work. So let's start talking about that. So she's hauled out at power boats in Trinidad, and then the work begins. Where do you start?
That was a tough one. Where do we start? it had a lot of junk on it. So I think a lot of the stuff came off the boat to start with to see what, you know, where the bare bones were, where we should start. And they took all the paint off the hull, which actually that had been done before we got to the boat. And they also took all the caulking out from the waterline down, which didn't really need to be done.
Mm-hmm.
It had only been done a few years before. So, the decks also needed attention right away. There was a few rotten spots. The decks are 3/4-inch mahogany ply,
mm-hmm.
which you just don't find anymore.
Yeah.
But where the fastenings for some of the deck furniture and stuff, where they had gone through the hull or the deck, there was some rot. So
yeah.
They started just taking, scraping back the rot, and we redid all of the decks. You know the details?
Yeah, the stanchions were made out of bronze those years, and a lot of them were broken off, and you cannot repair a bronze stanchions. You have to melt it and have it remade, and that became impossible. So we renewed all the fittings on deck. This old deck has been redone with what we call, it's not a chop strand fiberglass, it's not a matting, it's called a biax with epoxy, and on top of the epoxy we put micro balloon paint, mm-hmm. which is also mixed with and with the epoxy, and the whole deck was fed. The problem with the wooden boat, if fresh water comes into the hull and pulls up into the hull, this is where rot starts. So we eliminated that. That's the biggest job the hull had, biggest problem the hull had was the decks. The decks were not looked after.
Mm-hmm.
The decks are still 3/4 inch mahogany ply. It's just where the deck wheel was bolted to. It became loose with the years, mm-hmm. and fresh water started getting into all these holes and rotting part of the marine ply.
Oh, okay.
So that was cut out and replaced with today's modern marine ply and epoxied on top of it.
Oh, got it. Okay, thank you.
So there's some mahogany ply for the majority.
Today's Trawler Talk podcast is brought to you by Outer Reef Yachts, a leading manufacturer of award-winning long-range motor yachts from 58 to 115 feet. Find out more at outerreefyachts.com. Now, let's get back to our conversation.
What was next after the decks were in, got in pretty good shape?
Probably the engine, huh?
Well, like I said, nothing was, there was, the batteries got submerged. The freshwater pumps got submerged. The generator was submerged. The alternators were submerged. The starter motor of the engine was submerged. The electrical system looked like cobweb on the inside here. You know, I don't know if Laura sent you pictures of all the whole mess in the engine room and the boat. I don't know. But I eventually managed to start the engine, and it had a knock in it. So I had to take the engine out. The gearbox was redone as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was slipping. So, yeah.
It was a major overhaul. I don't know if I have pictures still, but Chris put a tarp up. We had the engine out, and it was underneath the boat with a tarp over top. And if you've never been to Trinidad, maybe you don't know, but in the summertime, it is so hot
humid.
Mm-hmm. It's like working in a sauna. And poor Chris had to overhaul this engine while trying to keep the sweat out of his eyes. But he managed.
How did you get the engine out? I mean, I can't imagine that was easy.
There was a crane. The boatyard has a crane. Mm-hmm. So Chris cut a hole in the cockpit over the engine room.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought a crane over and lifted the engine out, mm-hmm. and put it up on some bearers underneath the boat.
Wow.
Nothing on this boat is easy. For simple reason that in 1960, when Robert Beebe had this vision of crossing the Atlantic on mm-hmm. on a pleasure craft, so no longer than 50 foot or so, this boat, Passage Maker, was actually not properly thought out. If I can put it this way, it was a prototype. So, they didn't think that they have to take the engine out They didn't think that maybe one day we'll have to take the fuel tanks out.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do when the fuel tanks have to be taken out, because this is really like destroying the whole boat to get the tanks. There are four huge tanks on board. So, yes, I did cut a hole and managed to wiggle the engine out of the cockpit here.
Yeah, I can imagine that was tough to cut a hole in there after getting some of the work done. And you're going to have to do it again for the fuel tanks. But we'll come to that, cross that bridge when you come to it. So there was a lot of things wrong with the boat, obviously. And it sounds like the engine rooms and a lot of the mechanical and electronic systems were pretty shot. But what was on the boat besides the hull you had mentioned before that was like really impressive and intact?
The steering system is still very original.
Okay.
It is amazing the way they did the steering system. You often hear modern boats today, they lose a rudder, they lose the hydraulic system. This boat, in 1960, they installed this. It's still here. It's still here. It's got no play, no wear and tear, nothing at all. The autopilot is also original from the 1960s. It's still functioning perfectly.
Wow.
Our rudder and...
The rudder is solid bronze with a shoe. The rudder and the shoe, it's never been heard before or seen before, but it's solid bronze and it weighs 1.4 metric ton.
Whoa, well, there you go. It's almost ballast. Laura, I think someone mentioned the windows to her original. Is that right?
Yeah, all of these windows are like bulletproof.
Really?
What, 3/4 inch glass?
No, half inch.
Sorry,
half inch glass. Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah, and they're all original. They're just amazing.
Interesting.
And we have lots of glass on this boat. So it's really nice. You get a lot of light in here. And I don't think we'll ever have to replace this glass. They can shoot at us and those bullets are just not going to go through this glass.
Okay. Yeah, it might happen at some point. Hopefully it doesn't. But
pirates, because we were in Panama and there's a lot of piracy between Panama and Roatan. That was my greatest fear about crossing that area. So if we ever do that again, I don't think I'm going to worry too much. We're pretty much bulletproof.
That's great. Yeah, just keep them shut because I think some of those windows are operable, right? They open and close.
They're all operable. Yeah, they all open and close. They're pretty unique.
Yeah. What about the layout of the boat? Did you keep it original? Did you change it? How did you set it up for living?
We pretty much kept it original. The forward cabin had a 3/4 size bed and a bunk. We removed the bunk and we made the 3/4 inch bed into a full double.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, we pretty much left it the same. The galley, all we did was replace the countertop because it had this green kind of like chalkboard countertop that was pretty ugly. And we redid all the varnishing.
Okay.
And then the aft cabin, we changed a little bit. It had covers on the stern and we took some of those covers out. We enlarged the bed and we made a desk in the corner. So it has a window. You can look out to the stern and to the port side. There's two windows. So it's really nice little desk area. And we renewed pretty much all of the heads, put new toilets. So structurally, we didn't do a lot. We did most of it was painting, varnishing, sanding.
Cosmetic.
Replacing all the fabric and upholstery.
We put a thick floor in the wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah.
I had carpets before.
It had a really ugly blue carpet that was 100 years old. And we replaced the ceilings, too. It had these acoustic square tiles, but they were all falling down, and they had a lot of humidity.
Oh.
And they were kind of, it was almost like paper. I don't know. So we replaced all the ceilings. That was one of the first things we did, was replace the ceilings inside.
Yeah, I don't think you need acoustic tile ceilings or blue ugly carpet on Passage Maker. I think that was a good move.
Yeah, they use that to insulate against the sound of the engine.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose. This boat, you started the refit in earnest. Probably was it in the middle of COVID? You said, or was it just in 2021? When did it you really start? When she was on the hard and working every day, basically. When did that begin?
I guess it was towards the end of COVID by the time we actually got a chance to start on it,
mm-hmm.
Which also presented another little bit of a problem. In Trinidad, they hadn't been receiving any shipments of anything coming into the island.
Mm-hmm.
The supplies were very scarce, yeah. So a lot of things that we need is we had a hard time finding. Although they have good teak there in Trinidad, so we managed to find what we needed, but it was a little tricky.
Yeah, and I hesitate to ask this, but is the refit complete? Do you feel it's complete, or is this something that just is ongoing forever?
It's pretty much complete.
Yeah.
We weren't able to get any sails for the boat. We put a new roller furler for the Genoa, and...
No, it had no roller furler. We put one for simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have a proper sail for it. I found an old sail and cut it down and re-sewed it, but it's a little bit too small.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really work. And we don't have tracks or traveler for the sail either. And the mainsail, too, we don't have a mainsail on it. So sometime, I guess, in the future.
Okay.
The problem with not having a sail on this boat is, well, Chris is nervous about going out with just a single engine, mm-hmm. and it's an old engine, even though it's been rebuilt.
Mm-hmm.
Without any other auxiliary get-home mechanism. They used to have sails on the boat just as basically as protection so that we have something to get back ashore
sure.
if you do have a problem. So we don't have anything like that now.
Mm-hmm.
And what else do we need to do? We still, you know what, we've written up lists and lists and lists and lists of things to do. And we kind of put that all aside when we went back into the water, but now we're finding there's still other things to do.
Yeah.
It's finishing work.
Yeah.
There's nothing major
mm-hmm.
as such.
You know, I'm looking at a photo of her that you sent along. Are those the original flopper stoppers on the boat?
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
They were taken off. The vessel had... truck winches to bring the paravanes up. Those were stolen. I simplified everything because of cash.
Okay.
And on the mizzen mast, I put a yacht winch. So now these poles come up or go down mechanically. Mm-hmm. You just winch it up or winch it down by hand. It's not difficult at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the poles were taken out, the old brackets were taken off, and new one re-welded. They were re-epoxied, new shackles put on their new chains.
Mm-hmm.
The paravane, the birds, the deltas in the water.
Yeah,
I think they're original because they need replacing. They need replacing. They're quite fitted. And rusted. I had them sandblasted and for the meantime, sandblasted and epoxied so that we could get going.
Yeah.
but eventually it will need replacing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get those.
We have a davit made for on the back of the boat so that we could raise our dinghy up and down. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they did it before.
Yeah, they used the mizzenmast boom to lift the dinghy on the back of the deck.
But when we got the boat, it didn't have a mizzenmast boom.
No.
They didn't have like a weird little cover on the aft deck?
It had this wooden canopy. Yeah. I think the previous owner built it. Mm-hmm. It was made out of green part, which is a really heavy wood.
Mm-hmm.
And it weighed a ton, but the top of it was rotting through, so we decided to take that off, and now we're kind of working on making a canvas canopy for it, something lighter.
Cool. Yeah, summer's hot in Trinidad.
Also, I think it restricted the use of the flopper stoppers. So that the stabilizing poles weren't able to bring them up and down with that canopy on. But now we use those poles all the time, even while we're at anchor. It makes a huge difference on the roll of the boat.
Great.
It's a nice stabilizing system.
It's classic design. It still works. Why replace it or fix it, if it ain't broke? So tell me now, what are your plans with Passage Maker? You do some chartering, any long-range cruising plans? Like, what are your thoughts?
Right now, we've just started doing a little bit of Airbnb. Mm-hmm. It's time Passage Maker pays for herself.
Okay.
So we're making a little bit on Airbnb, and we're in Martinique trying to get established here. We're not really sure what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
We might decide to go further afield, but... I don't want to do another boat. I know that.
I was just going to ask that. Okay, so Passage Maker may be your last refit. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
But Chris seems very convincing, and his brother could probably sell me a boat today if I talk to him.
And we quite like Martinique. Chris has a Belgian passport. He's originally from the Belgian Congo. Mm-hmm. So we're able to settle here. We don't have to keep moving along.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like the idea of having a whole base.
Okay.
We've been living as nomads for a long time. And Martinique, it's kind of a magical little island. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I have to learn French, though. I'm not very good with my French. Chris is fluent, but not me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Chris grew up speaking French.
Oh, okay. In South Africa, Cape Town. In Cape Town, you grew up, right, Chris?
In the Congo.
The Congo.
I'm not South African.
Yeah.
Oh, you're from the Belgian. From the Belgian Congo, which is, of course, now something that different.
Yeah.
It's DNC now, right? Wow.
Yeah.
You just
said. Is correct.
When Chris was going to school, the war broke out, and so his parents sent him to South Africa. To finish his schooling, and then so he ended up spending a lot of his adult life in South Africa after that. Mm-hmm. Until I hooked up with him. And we dragged ourselves back to the Caribbean.
Uh-huh. Well, it sounds like you guys had a heck of a life together so far, and you've been great stewards of a classic boat. So as someone who took our magazine's name from that boat, we thank you, and best of luck with the boat, and I hope you hold on to her for as long as you can.
I think we will. She's really a nice home. I'm really kind of falling in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
When we were doing the refit, it was hard to, all we saw was all the work we had to do and all the things that were still on that to-do list. But now that we've moved aboard and able to just sit and relax. I'm really enjoying this boat. I really am falling in love with it. So I think we're going to hang on to it for a while. As long as we can.
Yes, if you want to buy the boat, I'm open, okay?
All right, Chris. After I'm going to let you guys go now and enjoy the beautiful weather here in Martinique. And I wanted to thank you for your time today. And where could we find you if people want, were interested in spending time aboard this classic boat?
Oh, well, we have a an Airbnb site in Martinique, but also have a Facebook page called Passage Maker Refit. And our other Facebook page is Divocean Charters, D-I-V-O-C-E-A-N. That was, we had a charter company, oh, you know, 15 years ago. And so we've kept the same Facebook page. And Divocean, well, we are devoted to the ocean, so it worked.
Sounds great. Well, Chris, Laura, thank you so much for your time today. And I hope to hear from you soon.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
All right.
Have a nice day.
Today's episode of Trawler Talk is brought to you by Outer Reef Yachts, a leading manufacturer of award-winning long-range motor yachts. Outer Reef specializes in building robust blue-water yachts that focus on luxury, efficiency, safety, and technological ingenuity. With a model line ranging from 58 to 115 feet, Outer Reef Yachts has the perfect model to suit any cruising lifestyle. Find out more at outerreefyachts.com. Thank you for listening to Trawler Talk, the podcast of Passage Maker Magazine, the long-range cruising authority. If you enjoyed this episode, please do us a favor and go ahead and click that 5-star rating. We would really appreciate it. And if you're not a subscriber to Passage Maker, it's easier than ever to get our magazine delivered to wherever you lay your head. Just go to passagemaker.com/subscribe. This episode of Trawler Talk features post-production from Nate Gruka at Active Interest Media. For Passage Maker Magazine, this is Editor-in-Chief Jeff Moser. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, fair winds and safe travels.